patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
I am back in Calgary. Have left Pennsylvania. A 3-2 record, not really the way that I wanted the last game to go down, as the rest of Blue Jays Nation, I'm sure, feels the same. But being in Philadelphia while that happened, and then needing to constantly get booed and be like, go back to Canada and be told how shitty the Blue Jays are and that we had this coming going into Philadelphia, I was just like, oh man, it just insult to injury.
Hey, speaking of insult to injury, what prompted the food fight in Philadelphia?
There was food. $1 hot dogs. That's literally all it was, man. It was cheap hot dogs. And so everyone was buying these trays of them. So everyone had like 8 hot dogs. And by the middle of the 7th, when everyone started to do the wave, everyone was like, hey. And there was even, what was funny, dude, there were people from the 400 level in Philadelphia screaming stuff like, take that, you rich losers. Like, it was like a classist thing. It was just like so funny. And man, my wife was so mad. Taylor was just so mad. She got beamed with one and she was just these animals. Like,
it's funny. When you first told me about it, I didn't even realize like how chaotic it was. It was like, it was getting covered. Like,
it was raining down.
Podcasts that I listen to that like aren't sports podcasts specifically were like bringing it up, and like it's quite the event.
Turns out you sell $1 projectiles at a Philadelphia sports game and people are gonna take advantage.
Maybe it's a new thing in Philly. Maybe this
that's right, the hot dog toss.
Sales were good, I'm sure, is what the notes will say in the business meeting on Monday, right? Like,
we sold 56,000 hot dogs and not a bad thing happened.
Not a bad thing happened. How many hot dogs did people eat? I don't want to talk about it. But we sold.
Yeah, we don't measure in consumption.
Cleaned up a lot of hot dogs. We cleaned up a lot of hot dogs. Okay, we got a lot to get to.
We do. Hello and welcome everybody to the walk off. A big thank you to the grounds crew for tuning in. We appreciate the likes and the subscribes and all of that good stuff. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. All sorts of stuff to get to. We are going to get into the coming week. We're going to do Adam's favorite little segment he's come up with, 3 studs and a dud. Espy and Cavan troubles. Oh boy, it's a deep one. Bo's error, we have to touch on it. I don't want to. You think I want to sit here and talk Bo Bichette? Sure don't feel like it, but we're going to. And catching. Both Danny Jansen and Alejandro Kirk at the beginning of the season were touted by many, many major league analysts to both be top 10 catchers in the game because of the offense that they provide to this Toronto Blue Jays team. Since that, neither have provided almost any offense. So we'll go over those numbers and then we'll end on a positive note here because Tim Mayza quietly having himself a hell of a season. Friend of the show, Tim Mayza. So we'll give him his kudos. All right, on that, hey, let's get into it. We'll start.
Speaking of kudos, Scott, Gabriel Moreno, maybe you remember him, went 1-for-7 in his last 3 games. So that really brought his season average all the way down to .302.
Yes.
He's having himself a season over there in Arizona.
Yes. Isn't that a fun game to play?
Yeah.
Look at those greener pastures we used to have.
It's a much funner game than 3 studs and a dud is. How's my old friend doing that I didn't want to trade? But anyways, let's get bitter some other time. We got some positivity, Scott. It's time for 3 studs and 1 dud. Man, we talked about it multiple times on, was I guess, Wednesday's show. Bo Bichette, consistently one of the duds. I went back through the records. He's been one of the three the three studs. I think 5 out of the 6 weeks that we've done this, so, or four out of five, because this is week 6. It's the
week. And I think the time he didn't, he got an honorable mention.
I think so. So we totally jinxed him.
Yes.
Still an honorable mention for this week. Unfortunately, right up until the final out of the Phillies series, probably would have been a stud this week. Mm-hmm. Tough to ignore that throwing error, though, in extra innings. That
hangs on his shoulders, yes.
I mean, is it a team effort? Is that loss entirely on him? No.
No.
It's not entirely on him, but that's also like the worst possible time for Bo Bichette to show up.
Yes.
So, stud number 3 this week. Let's get right to it. Stud number 3, Kevin Kiermaier.
Love to hear that.
He hit 400 this week. So, pretty good out of Kevin Kiermaier. 6 for 15, he went with a home run, 4 RBIs, more walks than strikeouts. It was a 2-1 on that regard. Had a stolen base as well, and an OPS of 1.204 for Kevin Kiermaier.
Wow.
So, very nice there. I think Bo Bichette, if he doesn't make that throwing error, probably leapfrogs him. Anyways, stud number 2, Eric Swanson.
Yeah.
Three games this week, 0 earned runs, 4 strikeouts versus 1 walk from Eric Swanson. I don't want to talk too much on this until the end, because we're going to bring up the bullpen when we talk to Tim Mazza. Yeah. But Eric Swanson might be my most trusted arm in the bullpen.
Yeah, I think he has definitely moved up the pecking order. I don't think he's going to knock Jordan Romano off of the closing role in John Schneider's mind, but he definitely has solidified himself as that go-to eighth inning guy. And I hate to just rewind quickly here. I was searching this out for Kevin Kiermaier, but he's rocking a 121 weighted runs created plus after 100 plate appearances. He already has 6 defensive run saves and 3 outs above average and 251 innings played in center field. 25.1 innings played in center field. But still, yeah, you know, incredible stuff. The guy has been everything that we were hoping to be defensively. And
the offense is sure.
I was just going to say, the fact he's contributing with the bat too. Bonus, yeah. Baby. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Eric Swanson, go ahead.
I want to guess your top stud. But
I'm not even done with Eric Swanson yet.
Yes, we're not done with Eric Swanson.
Come on, man. Eric Swanson
deserves to bask in the stud of
let him bask
the studliness.
I just wanted to say, I know he's not taking the closing duties from Jordan Romano. Jordan Romano, 3 outings, 3.38 for an ERA, WHIP of 1.5.
Yikes!
It was pointed out to me, and I thought this was a great point, is that as the closer,
mm-hmm,
I mean, ERA isn't the best evaluator metric for bullpen pieces anyways, but his numbers sure get saved by the fact that when he blows a save, the game's just over, right? Like, he can walk the bases loaded. That go-ahead run comes home, and it's just like, it's game over. One run counts, you know, whereas a 7th inning guy gets the hook, he's still on, you know, he's still responsible for those 3 runners that are on base behind him, right? I don't know. It's just an interesting thing someone from the comment section pointed out. Jordan Romano, the closing job is his, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I could see him losing it this season. I could see.
I mean, if he keeps blowing saves, yeah.
Well, I don't want to get too negative here. This is supposed to be Eric Swanson's moment, but he is definitely skyrocketing up my trust chart. Just in terms of when I see him coming in, I have like no concerns. My heartbeat does not increase when Eric Swanson's getting the ball. When Jordan Romano comes in, that's not necessarily the case. Okay, stud number one, you want to guess it.
Has he been a dud in the past?
Has been a dud in the past.
Does he create a lot of panic amongst the fan base in his slow start to begin the season?
Yes, he does.
Is it Brandon Belt?
It's Brandon Belt, your number one.
He did it.
Stud of the week. Man, what a little week he put together. So Brandon Belt, 1.511 OPS this week. 13 at bats, got him 6 hits across those at bats, with an additional 4 walkouts, home run, RBIs. I did it all. Brandon Belt definitely warming up this week. Is he good now? Like, he's.
If nothing else, I think he has squashed some of the panic. I think that he has shown why this team went out and got him. I really liked seeing him hitting in that 5 hole, splitting up the righties, just messing with the pitching timing and messing with the pitchers being able to get very dialed in when they can go 6 or 7 righties in a row. And so Brandon Belt did that beautifully. The fact that he was taking his walks, the extra base hits, it was a good week for Mr. Belt, and fingers crossed that it carries on. But good to see him at the top of that stud list and kind of cancel out that dud from earlier in the month.
Definitely a stud, Brandon Belt. Honorable mentions, let's just hand them out. Dalton Varsho hit 300 this week. Kudos to him. Nice to see that bat coming alive. Believe it or not, Kevin Biggio, honorable mention this week. Limited showtime, 3 games, only got 7 at-bats, hit 286.
Yeah, and you know what? He was called upon last minute when Vladdy's wrist was sore to step in and did so admirably. So good job on Biggio's part there. A little tip of the hat.
Here's what I don't like about Kevin Biggio. 3 strikeouts, 0 walks.
Yeah.
That's not what we need.
That's not the Biggio we want or need, yes.
No. So, okay, time for the duds.
One more little tip of the hat to Tim Mayza, who has also been incredibly solid over the last few outings and season in general, which we are going to get to at the end of this episode. But this week he stood out as a potential stud. He didn't quite make the list, but should be showing some love.
Get your own segment then, Scott. Scott Studs, we'll call it that. There you go.
That's fair.
All right. Dud number one, the one and only dud. Few honorable or dishonorable mentions we can get to. Boy, am I ever out of a rhythm this morning. I had the latest night last night for the stupidest reason, Scott. A Nintendo video game was released last night, and my wife needed to go to the mall for the midnight launch of it.
Ooh.
We went to the Southgate Center at 9:30 p.m. to line up for this game. Didn't get home till 2.
Wow. Yeah. That's when I got home.
There was 600 people in front of us. I couldn't believe it.
So did you get the game?
Of course we got the game, but we also could have just downloaded it digitally online at 10 p.m. from the comfort of our home.
Mm.
Like, she was so excited. We got to get it. She wanted to play it all night. We were so exhausted from standing in line, we went straight to bed. So dud of the week is my wife for making me do that. She's the dishonorable mention this week. The real dud is Santiago Espinal, Scott.
Yeah.
It's Santiago Espinal. Espinal not hitting well. Not playing good defensively from second base. We're going to get to this because he's the next segment anyways.
Yeah.
But Santiago Espinal, 0 for 12 this week. I don't know, man. That one of those games we lost to the Phillies where it was like hit into center field, Kiermaier fields it, throws it into second, and the guy's scoring from third. And then I know the throw wouldn't have made it anyways, but like throws it. What, I don't know, 8 feet wide of home plate? Like,
hey, I agree, and it has stood out. It is
what the funny thing is, too, is that people were ragging on Bo Bichette on that play.
Yeah.
Like, in our comment section. Don't worry, he got a chance to really botch one. But that particular play, I don't know. Oh my God, Espinal. Where to even start? Let's just, okay, that's the three studs and a dud. Let's get into the Espinal and Biggio problems.
Okay. And they are becoming an actual problem in this lineup. This is the thing with Santiago Espinal, and it sucks because I really do like the guy. I really had images of him being this utility all-star that can really move around the diamond and give you that solid defense wherever you need it. But his defense has not been good this season. His bat has been abysmal. Let's get into both those numbers here. I know you've got them pulled up.
Hitting 153 on the season. His OPS plus, so 100 being what, league average for his position. He's at 28. He's 72 points below average for his OPS.
It's rough, man. Like, it's when rough. When he comes to the plate, it is almost an automatic out at this point.
Sure feels that
way. And he's not alone. I mean, believe me, we're going to get to Jansen and Kirk here in a second. But I mean, considering the biggest strength of this team when we were going into the beginning of the season was the depth of this lineup. Top to bottom, there were dudes who could get it done with the bat. And Santiago Espinal was in that group. Who wasn't excited about seeing Espy hitting eighth or ninth in this lineup after watching him make the All-Star game last year, finishing with great numbers? Yes, he probably showed himself a little bit more at the end of the season as to what he was, which is more of a utility guy than an everyday player. That said, man, the lack of everyday
killing him
at bats, it's killing him. And how do you give him more at bats when all he's doing is getting outs? Like, this is the double-edged sword that John Schneider's dealing with.
Who do you
put in? Like, do you put in Kevin Biggio? Because we're gonna get to his numbers here too, and they are not much better.
Well, look, we talked last week, but I guess it was just a few days ago about Alek Manoah, his struggles. Is AAA for a month or two the answer? And that's what it feels like needs to happen with Espinal. Like you said, he's not doing anything with his bat, but I can't even hold that against him, because how can you get like
out of a slump
if you're hitting 11 times a week?
I think one of the things too that really has stood out as we've watched both Espinal and Biggio, struggle is how much skill and mental fortitude it takes to be a guy that's playing half the time. You know, like some of these guys get overlooked and kind of dismissed. But man, to have a dude who can come in off the bench and just be, honestly, I don't even give a shit if you're coming off the bench and you're not hitting. I just want to see you lights out on the field. And that's been one thing that's kind of stood out to me about Espinal this year, is he has not been that stalwart defensively that we were used to last season.
Well, I mean, Bo with his big fourth error of the season in extra innings, ultimately, I mean, there's no other way to put this, cost us the game, right? Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean the loss is entirely on him, but that moment was the difference. Espinal has four errors as well. In way fewer games.
Yeah.
And at arguably the easier position.
That's what everyone seems to say.
But again, when it's limited reps, it's like, I don't know what the answer is for Espinal other than maybe send him down.
This is what I was just going to say. Perhaps it is, he has options. Perhaps it is time to get him right, to send him down to the Bison and let him hit, put him in every day.
I mean, that's the thing, is he,
his confidence.
I don't even know if it's confidence or like just rhythm. Like, but also, when do you bring him back up?
Maybe you don't.
Like, here's the thing is, if the problem with Espinal is, well, he's not getting enough at bats, he's not getting enough gameplay, he's not getting this or that. If you send him down for 3 weeks and he's hitting 305 and you bring him back up, he's not taking Whit Merrifield's job.
No, he's not.
Right. So he's just coming back up to, guess what? Play twice a week. His bat's going to cool right off again. Like, you just leave him in AAA, let him get hot, and just leave him there until there's bad tacos. Like, I guess maybe that's a consideration. I don't know what the right answer is. I don't either.
Especially if you look at Biggio's numbers. Do you want to just read out Cavan's season?
Biggio's numbers aren't any better. He's hitting 138. For a batting average, OPS 452, OPS plus 26. So even lower than Santiago's.
So this is my question to the grounds crew and to you, Mr. Mack. Is there an option in AAA that would be better than either Biggio or Espinal currently? And if there's not, is that a problem?
Okay, so part one. Yeah, I think like Otto Lopez probably could do better in a pinch. I don't think is a better player necessarily. As far as the, is it a problem? I don't think so. I think this is like our 25th man on the roster, 26th man. Like, I know it's Nathan man. Lucas right now is probably technically our 26th, if you want to rank it that way. But like, I was looking at all the good teams. Like, nobody has, except for the Rays,
bench guy rating.
A 26th guy who's hitting 250 except for plus, the Rays, right?
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
It's, you know, I'm looking at the Dodgers right now. Trace Thompson hitting 130 for the team, you know, Orioles have guys, Gunnar Henderson hitting 175 at third base. Like, I know he's, I guess, is he a rookie technically?
I mean, I'd need to look into it. I know he did make his major league debut last season. However, I'm not sure if he had the at bats. Either way, he's young. He's 21 and it is what it is. Yeah.
You know, the Braves have guys, the Rangers, let's look, Bubba Thompson hitting 186, Brad Miller,
what
182.
What I give for my bench piece to be hitting 186.
Wow. I know, but I mean, if you're hitting, you're hitting like if you're hitting under 200, you're hitting nothing anyways. Like,
and I mean, well the truth zero. Is the truth is a 4-for-4 day from Espy does definitely really improve his numbers. All of a sudden, he's probably just under that 200 level. And like, that's the thing. He just hasn't been getting at bats, but man, when he's in the lineup, is it tough to take an 0-for-4 day every time he's in there? It's just, you know, like last season, he was so dependable when it came to doing the little things right, whether it was defensively or even just with the bat, moving runners up. Even if he was going to be out, he'd make sure to advance runners, put the bat on the ball, and that just hasn't been the case this year. And again, I'm with you, man. I don't know what the answer is to this problem because there aren't more at-bats, especially with a guy who's struggling. It's how hard is it for John Schneider to be like, let's make sure Espy gets in there when it's just an out almost every at-bat?
Whit Merrifield is our second baseman.
Yes.
He'll play outfield when someone needs rest, whether it's Kiermaier or Springer, or we're pulling Varsho out of the lineup because of a pitching matchup or whatever the case may be. And then we're getting cute with Espinal and Biggio in there. I don't know. I look at it right now and I think Espinal, I would rather see get sent down than Kevin Biggio, just because I think a little bit more positional versatility with Kevin Biggio. You know, he can play first base, put him in the outfield. Yeah. Offensively, it's not much of a difference, unfortunately. And I don't think Kevin benefits from going down to AAA the same way Espinal would. I don't see Kevin Biggio going down to Buffalo, all of a sudden finding it and hitting 350. I can see Espinal doing that. I can see Espinal going down to AAA and all of a sudden raking. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think that if you are going to send a guy down, Espinal is that dude. And I know, obviously, everybody's dream is that Addison Barger is ready to come up. And I think if Addy was pushing a little harder than he is, if he was making a little bit more noise in AAA, but I mean, he's currently at 76 at bats with the Bison. He's only hitting 237 and an OPS of 662. He's only got one long ball. He has not looked like the same guy that was making so much noise in the system last season. And you don't want to give a guy his major league debut and give him this opportunity if it's not warranted, right? It would just be a really weird move to call up a guy who's struggling in AAA to replace a guy who's struggling at the big leagues. It just doesn't really make all that much sense. Otto Lopez probably does make more sense, although Otto Lopez is also not lighting the world on fire in Buffalo.
I don't know what the right answer is. I mean, I guess Otto Lopez is the Nathan Lucas equivalent. You know, you need these prospects that hate, like, oh, this is like painful to say, but that like as an organization, you don't have long-term hopes for. Like, I don't think anyone in the organization is looking at Otto Lopez and going, this guy's going to be a guy that we're having long-term contract negotiations with in 7 years.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, you look at his plate appearances in AAA, he's got 116 of them. He's only hitting 200. His OPS is way below average. Like, he's hitting under 500. So you'd basically be calling up a guy who is doing in AAA what Espinal's doing in the majors.
Hey, speaking of minor leaguers with weird numbers, Aurelvis Martinez.
Another long ball for him.
He's hitting 116 on the season in AA.
Yeah.
This is the net the next like big offensive prospect that we should be excited about, right? He's hitting 116 through 24 games this season in Double A. He has 10 hits, 7 of them are home runs.
Yeah. And this
swing
this
hard is, just in case you hit it. That is why Martinez.
This is why, Adam, he's still in Double A. I mean, he started the season last year in Double A. His batting average has only gone down. Yeah, he's 21 years old. Something needs to give with Aralvis, though.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to be a major league player at this rate.
No, certainly not. 22 strikeouts versus 8 walks. Doesn't matter how hard you can hit it if you can't hit it.
And this is where I was like, my buddy texted me the other day just losing his mind about Bo and what a garbage shortstop he is and just how awful he is, and what they should do is move him to second and bring up Aralvis Martinez to play shortstop. And I'm just like, man, no, like,
get out of town.
Like, what are we talking about here? No. Like,
well, look, we talked about we talked with Sho Ali on Wednesday there about picking up the option for Whit Merrifield.
Yeah.
Man, did we ever get roasted in the comment section for that? But what else, not to get ahead of ourselves, we're only in May. We don't need to look ahead to next year yet.
No.
But like, what else do we do? Like, I don't want Aralvis Martinez playing second base for us next year. Like,
and there are appealing prospects. There are appealing prospects, but I mean, to bring up in a contention window and expect,
that's what I mean,
them to do more in the majors than they're doing in the minors. Like, it doesn't. That's not how it works.
No. What was Addison Barger's numbers? 237. Like, even if he hit 237 in the major, like, even if he did the same thing in the majors, we're not exactly going to the World Series with Addison Barger hitting 237. And why would he hit better at a harder level?
Even forget the batting average. The OPS is like 630. You know, like, it's not a good OPS either. And I know that Barger is struggling, by the way. So we're not shitting on the kid. It's just like, at this moment, there is no better options than Bo Bichette at shortstop for this Toronto Blue Jays team. You can be as upset about it as you'd like. It's just the fact. There's not a better shortstop out there on the open market. Who are you going to go get?
I know.
He went 27 games. We're going to get into the Bo Bichette stuff, and I'm probably getting ahead of things here. We can wrap up this Kevin Espy talk, and we basically just gave a bunch of problems and solved nothing. But
toxic positivity, right?
Yes, it is a problem, though. So we'll move on to this week's preview. The Toronto Blue Jays went 3-for-6 on the road on their swing through Boston and Pennsylvania. There were some disappointing games. That Boston series probably should have been a split. They just kept giving games away. Attention to details. John Schneider's mantra for this team is becoming almost a bit of a jab for fans. It's, you know, like, that's the thing. You make a big deal out of something and then don't do it, you're going to get ribbed. I know we've done it here on the show. It's hard not to be like, oh, attention to detail. Look at that attention to detail Bo had, right? Like, it's just, so it wasn't a very good road trip. They did go into Pittsburgh and sweep them. They gave a game away in Philadelphia. And truly, man, that 8-4 loss was so much closer than that score as well. And they kind of gave a bunch of runs away. This is the thing this team has been not very good at, is attention to details. This team, you can't give runs away to a team that went to the World Series last year and expect to win.
Great point.
I mean, the Boston Red Sox were touted as a garbage team, and really, what the truth of the matter is, they're just one of the worst teams in the AL East, which is still incredible, right? Listen, there are five teams out of 15 in the National League that are above 500. There's five teams in the AL East that are above 500. Everyone's acting like Atlanta is some sort of world beater, but let's look at their schedule. They're playing a lot worse teams than every single team in the AL East is playing.
More than half of their games have come from teams that are 500 or worse.
They're doing the job. They're getting it done.
Always got to say that. That is definitely not something to take for granted. But yes, they're 12 and 10 against teams over 500. Are 13 and 2 against everybody else.
They are going into a 10-game road trip. Or sorry, a 10-game homestand. Yes, 3 are against Atlanta, 4 are against the Yankees, and 3 are against the Orioles. But 10 games at home? Yes, please. The Blue Jays are 9-3 at the Rogers Center this season, and that includes the game they literally just gave away to Seattle and were one strike away from it being 10-2. I know that's not the way baseball works, and a loss is a loss, and you take your lumps. However, this team is very good in Toronto. I know that they're facing teams that are above 500, but a team like Atlanta, they're 25-12. But like Adam said, a lot of those wins came against the Washington Nationals and the, you know, like real duds when it comes to the teams.
Well, we got a real meat grinder, 17 games in the next 17 days. But before we do that, let's look at the next 7 days specifically. So you said Atlanta, New York. Let's look matchup by matchup because we're getting two Bassett starts. We're getting two Barrio starts. Confidence level, Scott, in either of these guys? Where are you at?
I'm confident. I mean, if this is a playoff, a one-game playoff game, am I going to Jose Barrios? If that's the question, no. But do I feel better about Jose Barrios than I have all season? Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about him. He's looked a lot better. He's hitting his spots at least. So at least when he's getting hit, he's throwing strikes. That's something. Chris Bassett has been awesome.
So game one, we got Chris Bassett. Braves putting Spencer Strider on the mound. Boy, is he ever pitching well this year. 67 strikeouts. For record, Chris Bassett has 33, so double that with Spencer Strider. Spencer Strider, ERA 2.7, whip of 0.93. He's putting together a Cy Young season.
Off the back of a big extension, buying out his arb years and extending him. I think he's not a free agent until 2030 after that 7-year extension that they gave him, doing the Anthopolis where you lock up your young players. Yeah, Spencer Strider is a stud. There's so many guys and gals on Blue Jays Twitter currently that are saying the Jays maybe have a chance of winning Saturday and that's it. And I just completely disagree with that. I really do think that Atlanta coming into Toronto, this team very well could take 2 of 3 and should take 2 of 3. The pitching matchup, yes, it does favor Strider in the first game. Bassett's been good. Bassett didn't ever allow a run last time he pitched.
Wouldn't be the first time we've gotten to a good pitcher. So, yeah, I think maybe 2 out of 3. I don't think that Spencer Strider matchup is going to be tough. Barrios versus Elder. It depends which Barrios shows up. Let's be honest.
Depends which Elder shows up.
Yeah, this is true. Game 3, we got Kikuchi going to the mound. And rumor has it, I don't know if this is, ESPN still has it as undecided, but it might be a Mike Soroka start.
Wouldn't that be awesome? I was seeing that too. And they are Mike Soroka, of course, a Calgary boy. Very Canadian kid. He has struggled to stay on the field the last 3 seasons. It's been a real bummer because the kid was getting Cy Young votes at 22 years old and just has literally done nothing but rehab for almost three straight seasons. So honestly, all the best to Mr. Soroka. I really do hope that he gets that start on Sunday. It would be great to see the Canadian kid lined up to pitch in Toronto.
I hope he gets blown up. I hope he has a healthy and ugly start in Toronto.
A healthy, ugly start back to his major league career. Yes.
There you go. So that's the Braves series. Then we got the Yankees in town for four. And game one looks like Alek Manoah versus freaking pop-ups here. Johnny Brito. Brito started the season Yankees, good, but
half
he's,
the
he's
Yankees starters more. These days are like, who?
Yeah.
They're just like reeling with injuries.
Pretty much.
Great time for the Yankees to be coming to town.
So we got Manoah versus Brito. Manoah pitches well against the Yankees. He pitches really well in New York. But yeah, Manoah. Confidence on Manoah? Where are you at for the first game of that series?
I don't have a lot of confidence in Manoah right now. I really would love to see a great start out of him. We are sitting here currently May 12th, and we've probably seen one decent start out of him. He looked really good in New York. He was hitting his spots with a slider a lot more than he has done most of the season. His velo is still down a couple ticks. We talked on Wednesday with Sho Ali of Jays Talk, 590 The Fan, about could a demotion to AAA be in the cards, and could it be what's best for him? And I know Sho even said if we asked him this 2 weeks ago, he would have just rolled his eyes and thought we were insane. But he's like, it is kind of getting to that point where if the kid can't get right, he's not going to be able to do so at the big leagues. So it may be time for him to try and fix things in Buffalo. The problem with that is, who do you go to?
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of guys in AAA banging on the door for an opportunity to pitch in the big league. So that is the problem. Fingers crossed, dude. He gets right with New York. He does always pitch well against the Yankees. He seems to hit a higher gear when it's New York. You love to see that. If you're just asking me if I'm feeling good about it, I am not. Well, I hope I eat these words, though. I hope we come back next week and we're like, boy, should have had confidence in him. Big Puma coming through.
Well, for the record, ESPN's matchup predictor has us at a 64% chance of winning that game with Alek Manoah on the mound. So,
okay.
There you go. Game two looks good as well. We're putting Gausman on the mound versus Domingo Germán. Mm-hmm. Gausman has been
lights out.
Everything we could have asked for from Gausman. Especially in light of the Manoah regression, the strong start to Gausman season, sure feels nice.
The big problem with Gausman this season is this team does not give him any run support. It is wild how whenever the Gauze is on the mound, this team's bats go quiet. So hopefully that ends in this Yankees series.
My math right on this, does he have a close to 10-1 strike to walk ratio? He's got 67 strikeouts versus 7 walks on the season.
Look at you, the mathematician. Yes, you're correct there.
Kevin Gausman, yeah, he'll probably go like 7 shutout innings or something, and we'll lose 1-0. Anyways, game number 3, this one gets a little tougher. They're getting Gerrit Cole on the mound. We're putting Chris Bassitt out there. Gerrit Cole did get roughed up his last start, though. I think it was the Rays got to him. Yeah, Rays got to him. 5 earned runs in 5 innings. 2 home runs. That's what the Rays did to Gerrit Cole. So, handed him his first loss of the season. Gerrit Cole has pitched really well. Front runner, maybe, for Cy Young in the AL right now?
Yeah, for May 10th, I would say that's probably the case.
And then we've got Jose Berríos versus Nestor Cortes. Funky Nestor.
Funky Nestor.
Nestor Cortez, phenomenal season last year for the Yankees.
Yeah.
A little more pedestrian this year.
A little bit 4.74
ERA. Yeah. I like Barrios in this matchup. I'm starting to have a little more confidence in Jose Barrios in general. I know that he's gonna give me a letdown every once in a while, but I've just been on the Jose Barrios stinks wagon for so long.
Yeah.
It's, I guess, relatively speaking, I feel good about him lately. I don't know what it is.
Hey, the Blue Jays have played 31% of their games at home. They are one of the lowest percentile wise when it comes to playing games at home. I'm excited. 10 games in Toronto. This team's going to be able to settle in. They're going to be able to be in their clubhouse, sitting in their seats at their lockers. I think that truly this is going to be a big homestand, and the fact they are playing good teams, you can really make up some ground here.
So
especially with playing the Orioles going into next week.
So let's look at these seven, and then we'll look ahead to the next 17 games in 17 days is a real test. But just for these seven, 4-3 against the Yankees and Braves. Would that be disappointing?
No. But I am going to say I think that this team goes 5-2 in the next seven games.
5-2. All right. I like it. Yeah, win both series. 3-1 against the Yankees, 2-1 against the Braves. Yeah, let's do that. If we can be 5-2, I'm going to feel really good about this team.
I mean, of course. I'll take 4-3. I think every Jays fan's there. We're well aware of who we're playing. It is the
Braves. How much hair are you pulling out if we go 3-4 or 2-5?
Yeah, I'll be pulling out hair. It'll be frustrating.
Sounds good.
I think this team should be coming out of this homestand with a winning record. I'd love to see 7-3.
That includes the Orioles series.
Yeah.
On the other end of that. That's in
Listen, Baltimore. Playing 700 baseball is tough, especially against the teams that they're playing. But I am very excited for this team to be home.
And okay, so
I would love to hear what the grounds crew thinks. Feel free to drop in the comments. Where do you think this team is going to be at after the next 10 games in Toronto at Rogers Center?
And let's look at the next 17, because we've got, is this ever a real meat grinder? Yeah, I know it's a cliche, but I love it. 17 games in 17 days. No rest for the wicked. This is a real test, Scott. We got the Braves, the Yankees, the Orioles, the Rays, the Twins. Best of a bad division, the Minnesota Twins. And we got the Brewers, the Mets, who are a good team. They're underachieving this year, but that's a good roster. I think they're 2 games under 500 right now. The Houston Astros, the Twins again, and then Baltimore.
Yeah.
Oh, followed by Texas, believe it or not. So we have like 5 straight weeks of really good opponents. This is going to be a wild test before we get the Marlins and the Athletics at the end of June.
Yes.
Like this 5 weeks could make or break our season.
It could. I don't think it's going to be that dramatic. I think it's going to be coming into the end of June and we're going to still be in the thick of things. I don't know if I don't think at the end of this stretch, Adam, that they're going to be division leaders, but I also don't think that this team is going to be knocked out of the wild card race. I think that playing good teams is good when you're a good team. Trying to stay positive.
17 games in 17 days. How many wins do we get?
I mean,
10-7.
I would be happy. I would honestly be happy with a 9-8 record. Not thrilled, obviously, but I would take 9-8. But I would love to see 10-7. Absolutely. I mean, who wouldn't, right? 10-7. That's great.
It's not great.
Against this group of teams, I'll take it, especially all in a row. I don't know, man.
I guess here's the thing. 10-7 is a 5.88 win percentage. And right now we're at 568 on the season. So that would be
on par with what
they're
doing. Up,
of what we're doing now.
Yeah.
All right, 10-7 over the next 17 games. Maybe. We'll see. It is against good teams, so you got to hang out with the contenders, right?
Yeah. Okay, right. Let's talk the subject we have been avoiding talking, which is Bo Bichette and the error at the end of that Philadelphia game on Thursday. Sorry, Wednesday. So it has... I made the mistake of tweeting mid-game. Bo had just made a running stab and a throw on the run to get a guy out at first that I would say half of major league shortstops would not have made. And I tweeted, Bo has quietly been much better defensively.
You jinxed him.
I jinxed him. This is all on me, I guess. This is pretty much Blue Jays Twitter's take as well. The amount of people that were like, oh, horrible take. Look at this. Like, this didn't age well. It's like, if you're positive, sometimes things don't age well. It's so easy to sit there and constantly cry, Bo should be moved to second base, or is even a more ridiculous take, a DH. I know I've heard a couple podcasts say that he should be sent down to AAA. Like, are we friggin' losing our mind here, guys? Bo went 27 days in a row without an error. His defensive runs saved and his outs above average have been far superior to the majority of Major League Baseball shortstops. People constantly, I got a message from a guy the other day just telling me what an idiot I am. And if I had any sense of baseball knowledge, the eye test would be enough.
Oh, yeah.
The eye test, Adam. We're living in 1972 here. The eye test is going to be. I mean, listen, Bo's not perfect. That is not what my take here is. My take is who is better out there that we could go get. There isn't a better option at shortstop. Bo Bichette is one of the best hitters in all of baseball. And he's playing a slightly above average shortstop. I am not forgiving him for that throw. He literally cost the team the game. Now, I agree with Adam. It wasn't just Bo Bichette. A long series of events took place before that happened. And whenever you lose a game in the 10th inning 2-1, yeah, maybe a little bit of light should be shone on an offense that just didn't show up outside of Brandon Belt. Jordan Romano with a blowing save. Like, there were a lot of contributors to this loss. That said, that throw is what put the nail in the coffin, and it sucks. Worst timing ever. But that doesn't erase the fact that he has been quietly good defensively.
Yep.
So who do you want? Like, all these people are like, again, it's like my buddy Rick, right? He messaged me and he was just like, move him to second and bring up Aroldis Martinez. Like, how do you take that seriously?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I hate feeling like I'm defending Bo, because I was there in Philadelphia watching it happen. It was the fucking worst, man. It was the worst. And then needing to constantly get ribbed by Phillies fans on the walk home, being told that the Blue Jays suck, even though the Phillies are still two games under 500. Like, it was frustrating. And I get that frustration from the fan base. But can we reel it in a little bit? And I know people are going to listen to this rant and they're going to be like, oh, he's defending Bo. I'm not even defending Bo. All I'm saying is, who the fuck is better out there? Who are we going to get to play shortstop? Who's a better defensive shortstop that's available currently? Who can they even go get at the trade deadline? And is he going to be a black hole of offense? Which I'm not even opposed to having at shortstop. But is there someone that is so defensively sound that is worth taking a zero in the batting category? I don't think there is. And if there is, prove me wrong. Please, Grounds Crew, do the work. Show me what this team should do to fix this problem at shortstop. outside of that first week, Bo has been really good. And I know Adam's got the numbers up here.
Outside of that first week?
Yeah.
Defensively? What? I don't know. I'm outside really of the feeling first on the week, spot.
Sorry, buddy. Outside of the first week, Bo has one error. The one in Philadelphia. His defensive runs saved and his outs above average. Again, they rank amongst the top in baseball. I mean, the timing of that throw is what is the dagger in the heart, right? When the game was on the line, Bo let down.
Yeah, it's a terrible time for that error to have taken place. It's unfortunate because we're never going to. It's just terrible timing, Scott.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's going to have another error or two in the next week. And then he'll be good.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted his. My stats are all like, messed up now.
We've already gone into Espinal. Espinal has just as many errors as Bo Bichette in a third the games. You want to put him at shortstop?
Okay, so I'm looking at numbers on the season. You wanted... Ugh, this is terrible. I'm not good at looking up advanced stats in a window because I don't like advanced stats because I'm an idiot. So I don't know how to look at his stats outside of that first week. What I do know is that on the season, his DRS, defensive run saves, that's what you told me to look up. He's at -1 on the season.
Okay.
Wander Franco leads the way at +4. No, that's incorrect. That's not sorted. Dansby Swanson leads the way at +4. Franco. Oh my God. I quit. Nowhere in these show notes, Scott, did you say stats for Bo's defensive numbers outside of the first week. So I didn't look that up. I am apologizing.
Hey, I'm also guess that's throwing you under sorry, the bus. Buddy.
Yeah. I'm flustered now. DRS, Dansby Swanson, 5. Wander Franco, 4. Willie Adames, 4. Jorge Mateo, 4. You also wanted, what, outs above average?
Yes.
Outs above average. Franco, 5. Bogarts, 5. Bobby Witt Jr., 4. Bo Bichette, 0.
Okay, so he has literally been average defensively. And again, if you do take out that first week of the season, his numbers are a substantial step up. That irrelevant, though. Irrelevant. We can go with the full season. That's what counts anyways.
For the, I don't know what the right answer is here. The big takeaway here is there's no one better out there.
Yeah. For the you're not offense signing... he's providing. Yeah. No, I'm with you. Like, yeah. You're not signing a defensive whiz because there isn't one out there that's available.
Shortstop free agents for 2024. So that's this offseason. We've got Enrique Hernandez. No, thank you. Brandon Crawford, 100 years old. No, thank you. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. No, thank you. Do you want a 35-year-old Elvis Andrews or a 37-year-old Brandon Crawford?
Whose numbers, by the way, defensively aren't really any better.
No, Brandon Crawford has taken a nosedive this year.
Age caught up.
Offensively, Brandon Crawford hitting .169 on the season. OPS plus of 62. Not very good. Fielding numbers. He's got four errors as well. Fielding percentage of 949. I don't know. Like, Scott, it's just... he is one of the best shortstops in baseball. And I'm taking in the defensive aspect into that when it's a whole statement. Like, you play both sides of the ball. I'm just so exhausted and frustrated by this conversation. It's like how spoiled we are to have such an amazing like MVP candidate at shortstop. And to be like, he's a bum.
This is a message I got this morning on Twitter from Bo Bichette Card. So obviously he's a Bo fan, but he says, Jay fans back on the Bichette to DH or second base mode again. I'm from Cleveland, and I got to say, I've never seen Guardian fans act this way towards their superstars. I don't think Jay's fans realize how lucky they are to have Bo Bichette. I mean, just look at other shortstops with the offense and defense. I mean, again, Bo Bichette is the fact he's being average defensive right now is great. This is all we need out of him. I don't know the solution here. Like, there's people who truly think that Bo Bichette is garbage and shouldn't. I mean, I heard a take where he should be sent down to AAA. I don't even know what to say to that. Like, what's really frustrating here, Adam, is like, I really do feel like I'm defending Bo, but I'm not. I'm just like, look around. Like, what is the solution? The solution is Bo Bichette's our shortstop.
Hey, we could have Carlos Correa. We could give him a mega deal and get a pretty sweet 191 batting average out of him. How's that sound?
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll move on.
What else to say? Please, can we?
Yeah, we'll move on. Oh, by the way, little shout out to Mustard Tiger's son, Ben. Hey. Mustard Tiger has been a member of the grounds crew since the beginning of the walk-off. So we love Mustard Tiger and all that he does. His son, Ben, has a take. And basically, Ben is very concerned about something that maybe not all baseball Blue Jays fans are concerned about. Ben is 8, and he is upset with how many teams are celebrating home runs and the fact that the Blue Jays jacket has been retired. He doesn't like that the home run jacket is retired, and in his opinion, he thinks that all the boomers should be rounded up so that him and his friends can have fun watching the Jays. So
I like it.
I like it too, but I got that message from Josh from Mustard Tiger, and it did make me laugh. So shout out to Ben. Yeah, you're right. The Blue Jays were ahead of their time with the home run jacket. Now everyone's celebrating home runs. Sorry, Ben. That sucks, man.
Yeah, I don't know. Do the Jays get anything going by the end of the year?
I don't think they do. I think they would have already had something if unless it happens organically, like maybe, you know, someone in the crowd throws a bucket of oranges down or something, and then they're all wearing orange slices on their head. I don't know. Like,
all right. Catchers are ice cold.
Oh, man. Kirk and Jansen, 6-44 on this road trip, dude. That's a 136 batting average. I don't even want to tell you their OPS because it's disgusting. They're not hitting with power. They've been a black hole offensively. And I know we kind of touched on it off the top, which is these are considered two of the top 10 catchers, both of them, in all of baseball. On almost every ranking from every analyst out there, both of them ranked in the top 10. I mean, you got to keep trotting them out there. I do believe in Kirk and Jano's bats. I do. We've all seen it before. they have been ice cold, man.
Yeah, it's I don't have anything good to say about it. It's just wait it out. Wait it out.
Yeah, wait it out. You know what? And we won't spend too much time on this catching category because I do feel like we're being incredibly negative right now. This is what happens on a 3-6 road trip, right? Everyone's like, oh no, look at all the problems. So let's end on a positive note here. I did think it was worth bringing up the catchers, and there's not really a solution outside of they're both cold at the same time, which sucks. And maybe as Belt heats up, we're going to see fewer and fewer at bats from Kirk in that DH spot until he kind of gets right.
I don't know. It's if we're complaining about the offense we're getting from our catchers and from the 26th man, like Espinal and Biggio, again, we're in a pretty good spot.
They are 21-15, despite the fact that they went 3-6 on this road trip. And now they're coming into a 10-game homestand. So there is some positivity to be taken here.
Hey, I just saw this headline. Maybe we'll dive into this on Mailbag Mondays. No, MLB Mondays on the Patreon. But Julio Rodriguez really struggling for the Mariners. So hitting 205 on the season. He's out of the leadoff spot. Mariners fans starting to panic.
Yeah.
I just mean, look, Vladdy's hitting great. Chapman's hitting great.
Bo's hitting
great.
Yeah.
Like things are going pretty darn good in Toronto. And if we're going to gripe about catchers who are not supposed to be hitters anyways, doing what they're supposed to do and disappointing us, I'm good with that. I'm good with that.
Okay, ending the show on a positive note here. When we were in Philadelphia, we actually ran into Tim Mays's grandma, dad, and cousins.
Hey, they were at Grandma Mesa.
Grandma Mesa. And Tim had two very good outings in Philadelphia. In fact, that 10th inning was such a bummer because Mesa did literally everything asked of him. He prevented the guy from scoring from second base. It looked like he turned, you know, he gets that big strikeout.
That double play.
It looks like he turned a double play and Bo just did what he did. However, Tim Mesa is quietly having a very good season. And I think that when it comes to the circle of trust, Tim Mesa is now in that John Schneider circle of trust. He is the only lefty in the back of this bullpen. He is putting up incredible numbers. I know, Adam, you've got those up. I know ERA is not something you want to dwell too much on when it comes to relievers, but when it's as good as the ERA Tim Mesa has, you take it.
So the ERA of 1.42, career best by a mile. The whip looks good. 1.263, like nothing to write home about, but it's not killing you either. What really looks nice, Ks per nine, 9.2. Walks per nine, 0.7. He's walking nobody, Scott.
He's walking nobody. He gives up some hits, but he's walking nobody. That's the kind of guy you want to see coming out of your bullpen. Good little tip of the hat to Tim Mesa. Of course, he's been on the show and we always appreciate whenever someone takes the time to talk to us, two bozos. So I'm cheering for Tim. I think it's great to see, and this team needed a guy who could solidify that left-handed role in the bullpen, and Mesa has been that guy. So kudos to Tim Mesa. Great to see him doing what he's doing, and fingers crossed that it continues.
Love it. Good episode, my friend. Let's end with this. It's what you watching this weekend.
What are you watching this weekend?
Well, after I spent 5 hours at the mall, I guess I'm watching my wife play a video game all weekend. No, for real though. We have a movie that is on my radar that I want to go check out. It's the Blackberry movie. You seen previews for this?
Yes, I have.
Oh man, this looks so good. So Glenn Howerton of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia fame, plays Jim Ball Silly, the man behind BlackBerry. Remember BlackBerry? Did you have a BlackBerry Curve when you were younger?
No, I was always an Apple guy.
I had a BlackBerry Curve when I was in college. That little roller ball in the middle and Brick Baker.
I was still flip phoning at that time, but yes.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I thought BlackBerry was pretty cool at the time. Nice having like all the whole keys, everybody else. You know, you're doing your T9, hitting five a bunch of times to get that letter you want. I had the full keyboard and I couldn't have been happier. This movie looks hilarious.
It does.
Hilarious.
Jay Baruchel. Canadiana there, because of course BlackBerry, a Canadian product. Cool, man. I am excited for that as well.
Mark Critch from This Hour Has 22 Minutes as Gary Bettman.
Amazing.
So good, man. It looks so good. Anyways, I can't wait to see this movie. So might go see that this weekend. Here's what I have been watching. Jewish Matchmaking on Netflix. So it is what it is. I was watching Love on the Spectrum with my wife on Netflix. And then we had to stop watching it because she said that people on TikTok were telling her it was problematic to be laughing at autistic people on dates. So we really enjoyed it and it was fun and felt like a good hearted whatever. And then she's can't watch this anymore.
Turns out you two are just pieces of shit.
Just huge bigots, apparently, for enjoying people finding love. But anyway, so now we're watching Jewish people finding love, and I'm sure I'll get canceled for this too. So anyways, that's my stuff.
So I just finished watching Beef with Ali Wong, who I absolutely love.
Nice.
I don't know. 6 out of 10.
Okay. Not a strong recommend.
Not a strong recommend. There were some really enjoyable parts of the series. The whole thing just kind of made me uncomfortable. I guess the last episode was nice. It kind of tied it all together. But basically, as a guy who has dealt with road rage in the past, I'm much calmer now, everybody. We don't need to get into it, but I'm a much calmer man now on the roads.
He legally has to say that. That is legally, a court-ordered statement.
Yes, it's a court-ordered statement, it just made me uncomfortable watching how much this beef between the two kind of
spiraled
out. Yeah, spiraled, exactly. But I mean, if you like Ali Wong, maybe check it out. She was great in it.
You have to have watched Seinfeld.
Of course.
Okay. Did you ever watch Veep with Julia Louis-Dreyfus?
You know what? I never watched Veep, and I've been told many times I got to. So that is on my list. Yes.
You definitely should. It's a bit, it's obviously very political. So that is a turnoff for some people, but it's such a smart, sharp comedy. It's great. Anyways, reason I bring it up is the matchmaker woman on Jewish Matchmaking looks so much like Julia Louis-Dreyfus in Veep. It's like all I can think about every time she's doing her little cutscenes. I'm like,
shits appeal. Is that what they got? Shicks appeal.
Kramer, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways, we're totally off the rails. Thanks for everybody for sticking it out for a pretty long episode today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much, everybody. We will see you Sunday for Long Toss. Cheers.
Bye, Dad.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and cracker shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.